Hi there, everyone, and welcome along to this Monday Racing Postcast. It's the 1st of March. I'm Maddie Playle, and this week I'm joined by James Stevens, I'm joined by Mark Boylan, and also by Graham Byrne, who's been our regular for the last couple of months. Now, what's coming up on today's show? An awful lot, in truth. The big story that broke over the weekend was a photograph of Gordon Elliott circulating on social media. I think it first came to light on Saturday evening. Statement released last night, and this is very much an ongoing story. We're also going to have a look back on Kempton and some of the big performances from the weekend. In Ireland as well, we have the likes of Jason the Militant and Acapella Bourgeois put across their claims for the spring festivals too. So lots to talk about, but understandably, our first port of call is this Gordon Elliott story. I'm sure, unfortunately, a lot of people will have seen the image of Gordon Elliott sitting on a dead horse at the side of his gallops. The IHRB and Gordon are fully investigating all of this, and he released a statement last night addressing the speculation and giving his side of the story. This comes at a time as the spring festivals, I mean, whenever this would be released, it would clearly be shocking and horrible for anyone to view, but this comes at a time very much when eyes are going to be on racing. I mean, what does this mean, James? What's your view on this?
Yeah, it's a really, really disappointing circumstance we're in. You know, it's the 1st of March, we're just around the corner from our biggest 4 days in the season, and yeah, it's a massive shame. I think the reason I sort of got from this is that I think that racing is always on the balance. You know, there's a lot of people who like racing, and there's a whole host of millions of people in Britain, and in maybe less so in Ireland, that sort of don't have an opinion about racing. They know, they're aware of it. Sometimes they'll even go for the odd day out, but it's not something they're really interested in. But this is a story that people are going to be looking at and focusing on because it's a picture. You know, it's visible. You know, whether you love horses, you don't know horses, or anywhere on that spectrum, you're going to be able to see this picture, and it's not nice to look at. And there will be a lot of people who will be looking at that picture feeling very uncomfortable, as I was, but there'll be people now who are feeling uncomfortable about horse racing. So what this is going to mean for the sport, we don't know, and it's going to last for a long time. But the only thing we can do, and racing can do, is take action and really sort of put its mark down to suggest that this isn't what racing is about. And we're all in racing. We understand this. You know, I've been to many a yard myself. We all know that horses have to be happy, not just physically fit, but happy as well if they're going to perform. And the fact that they put in so many brilliant performances on the race course day in, day out just shows that. So, yeah, it's not an accurate picture of what racing's like. But unfortunately, it's a really dark and dim snapshot that some people are going to see, and they're not going to get to see the brilliance that we get to see. So, look, I really hope that this is something that we see and will eventually sort of be forgotten about in time. But at the moment, this is a really dark day for horse racing.
Yeah, really well summed up there. Graham, I want to go to you quickly because we were just chatting before we came on, and I said, has it had much of an impact on you? And lots of people have been in contact with you who aren't involved in racing, and it's clearly a story that has already caught the attention of a lot of different people from a lot of different backgrounds.
Yeah, it's sort of gone beyond the bit of horse racing, this story. Just the shock of the picture when I first saw it, I just assumed it was a bad Photoshop. But then when Gordon Elliott released a statement late on Saturday night, you were thinking, my God, it is actually true. And it's just an awful image it is. And I mean, the IHRB are under huge pressure now, not least by their counterparts over in Britain. And I think this is something that they've got to get out in front of quickly. It couldn't have happened really at a worse time for National Hunt with Cheltenham just around the corner. And I think prompt action is needed here on Gordon Elliott for this picture.
Indeed. Giggenstown have come out to support Gordon Elliott. You know, they don't condone the image by any circumstances, but they're going to stand by the trainer. And Cheveley Park, of course, who have Envoy LN, Sir Gerhard, so many others running in their colours for the trainer. They are still reviewing matters as we speak. We were talking, Mark, about the rule book and the specifics behind this and what this could mean going forward, given that, you know, details are coming out all the time. What can you tell us from that perspective?
Sure, look, there's obviously scope there in the rule book under the matter where it involves preserving the good reputation of horse racing in their IHRB's rule book. You know, it mentions that there are sanctions possible there if you're to do something that is prejudicial to the integrity, proper conduct, or good reputation of racing. So that, look, there is grounds for that there. But you know, look, it's just upsetting, isn't it? It's not something that, you know, anybody can come away from this feeling that there's any positive to be taken. And I think it's really, I do have sympathy for the stable staff and Gordon Elliott's, who will be, you know, feeling this morning. I'm sure Gordon Elliott is as well, but obviously his action was just unbelievably stupid, you know. And as a brilliant trainer, fantastic, you know, in how he's come through the ranks to be where he is, it's just, to me, an absolute moment of madness for him. But I think one thing that needs to be stressed is that there is no welfare issue in Gordon Elliott's yard, or within racing for that matter, as far as I'm aware. Like this act, which is just incredibly stupid, I think there needs to be separation there between this and any potential welfare issue. As James has rightly pointed out, you know, those who look at racing for the once a year, this is something that has, you know, caught national headline. It's the last thing we needed, it's the last thing we wanted, and it's an image that kind of undermines everything that we know racing embodies, you know, because this is, I've spoken to a number of trainers this morning over here who are just disgusted about it, and they really view this as totally not representative of what we know it to be. But I just think we have to make sure it's separated, that, you know, this is just an individual act which was unbelievably stupid, but we can't draw wider connotations here in terms of welfare in racing or in Gordon Elliott's yard. I've been to that yard numerous times. I know the staff there, and I know the care that's there for those horses. That is absolutely no issue whatsoever. Those horses are looked after immaculately. The care is second to none. So I think even in when we're considering, you know, how we approach this in terms of penalties, the reputational damage that has been done to Gordon Elliott in this as well, that will be of greater consequence probably than any sort of penalty that is imposed on them. And obviously, reading from that BHA statement that's just been released before we've come on air today, they've mentioned that they're considering their own regulatory options while recognising that the IHRB are carrying out their own investigations with Gordon. And I mean, that to me suggests that if, you know, it obviously we're here and we don't know, we don't have the full set of information at the moment, but, you know, that would suggest that possibly the BHA could consider its own, you know, if their sanction wasn't strict enough in their eyes, that they could look enforce something as well. That's obviously, it seems to be on the table from reading that, and that would have an impact on Cheltenham going forward. But, you know, I find it hard to even think about Cheltenham when I think about, you know, something that is just sad for racing in general.
It is, and I think, you know, that's the thing with social media and photographs and things like that. It's a snapshot in time, and it, as you say, it might not necessarily be representative of the wider picture, but unfortunately, to a large percentage of the wider population, that trust is broken there and then. It's instantaneous. It's without extra context, isn't it? I mean, we've spoke about the IHRB and the action that they're taking, and as you say, even the BHA. And there's, as well as with the jurisdictions, there's probably a difference in how different people have reacted between Britain and Ireland, do you think?
Yeah, I think it's kind of the social media response has been pretty unanimous, and I think a lot of it just anecdotally, from what I can see, seems to be you know, widespread criticism and a lot of British commentary on it. And even the BHA yesterday intervening at a point when the IHRB had already announced that it was going to undertake an event, or had one already undertaken in terms of an investigation. You know, I thought that was interesting at the time, you know, in terms of whether there'd be separate sanctions with the authorities in Britain. But yeah, like, I think, not that there is any, again, I hope I'm 100% clear that I'm not trying to defend this in any way possible. I'm not, because this is just, it's just incredibly stupid what in terms of an act. But in Ireland, you know, we are close to the horse here. There is an appreciation of the horse. I can only speak for us over here. I think anybody that loves horses will see that, and you can't help but be, you know, upset by it. But, you know, I think over here there has been such an impact of what's already gone on reputationally. I'm not saying that is not the only sanction, but just, you know, if we do have a scenario where Gordon has a suspension of his license, it doesn't just impact Gordon, it impacts the various owners. And I thought it was interesting reading from Cheveley Park's statement today that they will be, well, this morning, obviously, this conversation could be taken a totally different direction by this evening. Who knows what way this will go. But, you know, they've mentioned that they're going to await the IHRB outcome before making any further comment or decision. So, you know, that suggests that, you know, in the immediate future, you know, who knows if there was a suspension put on Gordon, will there be an impact in ownership perspective? Who knows? But it's I do believe that there is a slight difference, I suppose, in the commentary between the two. But whether that's representative of anything greater, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah. And ultimately, it's going to be a very challenging couple of months for the industry and for the sport. So many people put their lives and their hard work and their love and everything into this sport. So very, very sad to see one image betray that and everything that we're privileged to work in this industry. So for more on that story, as I say, it's constantly being updated, and I'm sure many, many more aspects of this will come to light in the next couple of days. Go to racingpost.com and the Racing Post app to follow everything there. Now let's review the ITV racing from the weekend. As it is sort of traditional with the build-up to the Cheltenham Festival, some quieter events, although often the last chance for these horses to make their mark ahead of the festival, and indeed Aintree. I think we could see plenty of this weekend's winners go on to that meeting. First off, let's start with Clondor Castle. He took the step up to 3 miles in his stride when winning the Close Brothers Handicap Chase for Jonathan Burke and Tom George, a trainer who has a good recent record in this race. It was a very interesting tactical affair, this, because a few of them seem to go very, very fast. But this horse has been remarkably consistent, James, throughout the season. And he seemed to handle this trip okay, didn't he?
Yeah, it was a really good race, actually. I have to say, I've watched it back a few times. I really enjoyed it. Really, really good race. And I think the winner is a horse that's going to take a massive step forward. I think he's always sort of had the level of form which suggests he could be a little bit better than a handicapper. And from watching that race back, I think he might just be that. You know, I wouldn't be sort of surprised if they went up to grade one level next to him just to sort of try him in something like the bowl at Aintree. As you say, it was a real fast pace and he finished his race off strongly. His jumping was good. The horse I was really taken by was Mr. Malarkey, who was, I think he was second in the weights. He's a horse they've always, the Tizards have always thought he'd be a Grand National contender. The way he travelled through that race and jumped was superb. And I think the best thing about him is he just didn't have the speed to quite win over it. But it might just be that he's going to travel into a race at Aintree. And who knows, he could be a bit of a live outsider. But it was a fantastic race. And I think the winner will turn up at Aintree in the Grade 1 next. And yeah, I don't think you'd rule him out on the form of that win.
Yeah, the form looks okay, doesn't it? You mentioned Mr. Malarkey. He was last year's winner. So that shows it off pretty well. Clondor Castle, he'd already plied his trade in graded races and done so pretty well. Any thoughts on the horses in behind, Mark? Because it was run at a pretty furious gallop, visually anyway.
Yeah, and I'd echo what James has said there in terms of Mr. Malarkey. I mean, the Tizard stable form has been a topic of conversation throughout the whole season, and you know it's still not 100% back there just yet. But I thought that was really encouraging, and if the stable turned a corner to really get back to the form that we know they're totally capable of as a super outfit, you know, I thought he'd be interested in one of the handicap chases come entry time as well. You know, further down the field, as horses like the Butcher said, just never got involved, and I wouldn't take that as his true running. But you know, I think the winner, that sort of ground is important to him as well, isn't it? You know, he's very, very effective and clearly likes the track. So, no, a fine performance from him, and hope to God Johnny Burke can carry that form forward and hopefully bag a first Cheltenham Festival winner come March. It'd be great to see it.
Brilliant jockey, isn't he? And he's really sort of making the most of the contacts he's got in Britain now. Eric LaRouge, what a run from him, and Jamie Moore, great sit early on. And Romain de Senam, he could be one to follow perhaps down in trip, travelled into it really well, but perhaps just didn't get home. Next, let's talk about Tritonic then. I anticipate he'll be one of the real movers with regards to Cheltenham. He won the Close Brothers Adonis Juvenile Hurdle, the Grade 2, beating Casalupi, the same horse he beat at Ascot last time. It was a much bigger margin between them this time. Paso Doble ran quite an eye-catching race in third, I thought. What price did you cut him to for that triumph, Graham?
Well, it's been quite the story. Winner's price at the moment was 10-1 before the race, and that was taken into 8-1. Now it's 5-1, 4-1, and it keeps going 7-2, and it's into 3-1 now. Of course, the main market principles in that one, Zanayir and Qualixios. There is a cloud, of course, over the Elliott Yard, and I think punters are sort of latching onto it a bit. Tritonic has been all the rage into 3-1. French Seal could be the dark horse here. That's still a 6-1 shot. Last horse to do the double for this was Zarkander back in 2001, who won the Adonis. But Alan King, interestingly enough, he did it back in 2005 when Penzance won the Adonis, and it went on to win the Triumph. But 3-1, and it has been all the rage, Tritonic.
Yeah, lots of people fancying this horse, and the turn of foot he showed after the last was brilliant. I think on Racing Post ratings, he's only a couple of pounds behind a Peak Xana here as well. How do you think they match up, Mark?
I was very impressed, and I was hoping that I wouldn't be impressed, and I was hoping that Xana here, my confidence would remain very much intact, but he did give me a fright now, I will admit. I wasn't bowled over by the level of form that what he's achieved in that sense, but I do think that style that he's done it in, and I love how he hit the line. You know, I do think that there is a fair bit more to come from him. You know, I've been a staunch Danaher fan throughout the season. I thought he was head and shoulders above what we have here, even though Quilixios is clearly talented. You know, with a horse like French Asile, I think, although Willie has given him every chance to get used to the Mullins training regime by going straight from Christmas to Cheltenham, you know, I think that there is a chance that we won't see the very best version of French Asile this year, potentially next year when he has a full Mullins programme under his belt, so to speak. I'd probably just still favour Xana here, and he would have been one of my biggest selections of the week, Xana here, coming into Saturday, but it has just slightly dented my confidence a bit. Tritonic's a proper horse now. It'll be a very, very good duel.
It will be. I was interested in French Asile, but like you say, it's slightly concerning that he's only had that one run, none yet for Willie Mullins, of course. James, Tritonic, great for Max McNeil and his family to have another really good horse. And Alan King, he certainly knows what he's doing with any horse, let alone juveniles, which he's had a particularly good record with. How do you assess this horse and what he achieved on Saturday?
Yeah, as you say, it's brilliant for the family. Max has always sort of said, and he's been very public, isn't he, that the fact he wants a sexy two-mile hurdler, and blimey, he couldn't have asked for anything more on Saturday from Tritonic. I thought it was a really, really good performance. I mean, he beat the same horse he beat at Ascot, and he extended his advantage by 9 lengths. I think it shows, on the form perspective, he's taken a massive step forward. But, you know, he's only had 2 starts at the hurdles, but he still looks pretty slick over them. You know, he certainly doesn't look like a horse who's going to have any bother if he needed to go, you know, over a bit further. He didn't seem to be tiring, which sometimes you can get with flat horses going over hurdles. And he seems to have everything in his favour. I think the problem with him, or maybe not the problem, just the question mark even, is how he's going to compare to the Irish horses, because, you know, the Adonis is on form and going back, as we just mentioned there, it's usually a pretty weak race compared to the other sort of traditional Triumph trials. So he's got sort of to prove the trendsetters wrong, but no, you couldn't be any more impressed by him. He looks a little bit better than what we've seen in Britain so far this season. I think that's for sure. He's the biggest danger to the Irish, I think, and it's going to be a fascinating race, that's for sure.
I think Cheltenham will suit him as well. As you say, seems to be a strong stayer at the trip, also has acceleration, but just a very genuine and exciting horse. Another one of those we saw in the Close Brothers Pendle Novices Chase. Paul Nicholls has made a mockery of this race, really, in recent years. I think he's won 6 of the last 10 with the likes of Frodon and Surname. So I'm sure that Tamarok Dumathan is going to be a name to keep an eye on. Perhaps not the strongest renewal of this race, though, but he did it very easily in the end, James. Where do you think he's going to fit in when it comes to these upcoming festivals?
Yeah, you mentioned there not the strongest race. I'd have to agree with you, but I would say I think Galore is quite a useful horse, and he's, you know, Jamie Snowden's done a really, really good job with him and campaigning him and finding sort of nice races. But he just bumped into one who was a horse on the up, and just a typical Nicholls horse, isn't he? Just take your time with him. And Nicholls is so good at finding these races and just sort of finding the right options for him, their steps. I think this one would go for the 2.5 novices chase at Aintree. I think it's called the Manifesto. So race Nicholls has never won, believe it or not. There aren't many grade one chases in Britain Nicholls has never won, but that looks the obvious place. I think this is a horse who's going to be a little bit sort of ground dependent. I think he always wants to be a bit quicker, but yeah, he's only 6. He's a horse on the up, and that's turning into some stable, isn't it, this season?
Yes, and don't forget that Tamarok Dumathan was hammered by Shishkin over 2 miles last time, so that was a boost for that horse's form. And you can imagine, I mean, I mentioned that Manifesto in today's Monday Jury. I'd love to see him in that race, or even a race like the Future Champions Air. Good ground, relatively flat track, I think will be his cup of tea. Graham, I don't imagine he's in many of your Cheltenham markets, although I think he has got an entry in the Grand Annual. Maybe not likely to turn up there, though.
Yeah, he has been trimmed for the Grand Annual. The only entry has 16 to 1 into 12 to 1. Interesting, it's a race Paul Nicholls has been the top trainer in his four victories since the war. He's been the top trainer, St. Piran, Andreas, Solar Impulse. Le Presium was his last winner back in 2018. But as James was saying, he's very much leaning towards entry with Tamarok D'Amata.
And the Irish continue their good record in Britain, and Emmett Mullins grabbed the Grade 2 Dovecot Novices Hurdle sponsored by Skybet. This was a real fascinating finish. He got the better of Calico, who looked to be travelling slightly better, but this five-year-old under John Joe O'Neill Jr., he just was really game and renewed his challenge inside the final furlong. What did we think, James? Because I thought a lot of people weren't necessarily chuffed with the way that Calico went through with his effort.
Yeah, I think the first thing I felt was scared, actually, when I watched this, considering this horse was pulled up at the Dublin Racing Fest and he's won a Grade 2 in Britain, considering the strength of the Irish contingent going to have here in a fortnight's time. But no, it was quite a good race. I mean, I'm not sure how strong the form will turn out to be. But the front two certainly look like they're sort of progressive young horses who are going to make into some quite nice prospects in time go by. I'd be leaning towards a second more as a horse to take out of a race. As you say, he travelled into it, and by the looks of him, he looks like the type who might improve over a fence. And we know Dan Skelton's pretty good with these novice chases, so he'd be the one I'd take from it. But yeah, it's my first feeling was fear almost after the result.
Similar to what Nicky Henderson was saying when he watched the Dublin Racing Festival, wasn't it? Mark, what can you tell us about Cape Gentleman? Because he was a very good flat horse, but he hung badly and was pulled up in that opener at the Dublin Racing Festival. This was much better, though.
Yeah, and I think it's another advertisement of Emmett Mullins' talents. You know, he's a very, very capable operator, and he's willing to try new things as well. I mean, I think back to Fujimoto Flyer a couple of seasons ago, where I think she was Japanese-bred mare. And he ended up going over to Autai for a listed mare's hurdle and picking up decent prize money over there after winning at Killarney previously. Like, he's willing to try new things. And this Cape Gentleman, you know, it's another one of the successful raids for the yard over to Britain. To me, I thought he was in trouble. I know he stays very well, and I was concerned about coming back to 2 miles for him. But, you know, he has a bit of class from the flat and fairness to him. But the runner-up, just he wouldn't have inspired confidence in me now in terms of a finishing effort. I'd be very kind of wary of him going forward. You know, I think in the end, stamina, he was able to keep pulling out enough. Whether I'd have him, I wouldn't have him among the top novices over here, to be quite honest. I think he has the potential to win a couple of nice pots over here, and he's in the right hands to do so. But I do think there's a number that are ahead of him over here at this stage. But fair play to the Mullins camp for finding a good opportunity and executing well.
Indeed. Now, it was Newcastle's big day as well on Saturday. They had the Vertem Ida Handicap Chase. Over 4 miles, 1.5 furlongs. Usually this race is a bit of a slog, only soft ground this year though. And it was won by Sam's Adventure, who again battled back to beat Crossley Tender, who looked a likely winner. The 92 favourite Salty Boy finished third. Cross Park came with a very good late run, but was weakened quickly and was pulled up. But he's come out of it and was treated for post-race stress. So hopefully is all okay with the 11-year-old Cross Park, who's a real favourite in Britain. But this was an interesting race, and Sam's Adventure is a handicap chaser on the up for Brian Ellison, isn't he, James?
Yeah, it was another cracking race, actually. It was some really good race on Saturday in terms of sort of battles and such, and this was one of them. I was more sort of interested in the second, actually, Crossley Tender, who's had just this marvellous campaign. I mean, I remember when he won a race at Newton Abbot. I think it was a class five, and he's just gone from strength to strength. He's had a few really smart performances at Exeter, including one in January, beat Mighty Samuel Jackson, which was a particularly nice piece of form now. And yeah.
Well done you for tipping him up.
Yeah, there's no chance of me not getting that in. But Sam's Adventures, and another horse who's really improved throughout the season. He's won on some really heavy Haydock ground, beating a nice horse of Anti Honeyballs, who also loves that sort of ground. So on that form, he was coming here with a decent chance. I mean, I don't quite know where they'll go next with him, to be honest with you. I wouldn't mind a pop at the Midlands Grand National with him, just considering how much he sort of handles the real sort of Haydock heavy ground, and he's banging form. But, you know, when there's a horse in these sort of a staying handicap as they're on the up, they can be quite hard to sort of stop sometimes. So I certainly don't think he's hit a ceiling yet. So one to keep an eye on. And a great race, wasn't it? Really, really good to watch.
It was enjoyable. And from that marathon distance to slightly shorter, just after this, we're going to talk about horses who could be involved in the Champions Hurdle.
Paddy Power are streaming all UK and Irish racing on our app. No bet required. Just log in and watch. Terms and conditions apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Welcome back to the show. And that horse that I mentioned just before the break was a Jason the Militant. He won the Red Mills Trial at Fairy House on Saturday. Another string to Henry de Bromhead's Cheltenham Bow. He's obviously got Honeysuckle, who's already a short price for that Champion Hurdle. But Jason the Militant was sent off the 7-4 favourite. Made all jump nicely and put Petit Mouchoir in his place. How do you think this horse is going to feature in a Champion Hurdle, Mark? Because he tends to like to go from the front. And I think we shouldn't underestimate him because he's improving, isn't he?
Yeah, and I think an ease in the ground is important to him. So I suppose Champion Hurdle Tuesday will be a help to him in that sense as well. Look, I think he's got plenty to find, in fairness, to get up to the level that's set there by your Epitaphs, Honeysuckles, Goshens. But he's a very, very capable horse. And he's the sort of horse that, if connections opt to keep him over hurdles, and he's obviously got plenty of gears as well. He's won a mile and a quarter maiden on the flat as well last year. If they keep him over hurdles, there's bound to be plenty of graded opportunities for him to collect over here. I think at this stage he'll probably be a little bit short of Champion Hurdle class. And I know he was well beaten ultimately, but Petit Mouchoir, geez, you have to take your hat off to him. Like he's some servant. Like and this horse, the ground for him, he's surely going to want it better. Like considering his record around Leopardstown, where you can typically get a better surface, I suppose, to other places. You know, I thought it was a really spirited effort, and geez, he's a horse you just love to own everywhere you go with him. You're bound to get a run for your money. An enjoyable race, but Rachel Blackmore again excelling from the front, really, really timed it to perfection.
Yeah, the Morans are going to get so much more fun out of Petit Mouchoir, aren't they? Just so much enthusiasm in that horse. Seems to run his best every single time. He was getting quite a lot of weight from Jason the Militant, but that couldn't make the difference in the end. But Champion Hurdle, with the likes of Goshen, this horse and others, do you think it could be quite a strong pace, Mark? I mean, that would suit Honeysuckle in theory.
Yeah, you'd imagine so. As long as she doesn't get caught up in the teeth of it, you'd imagine that would suit her quite well. And I think, you know, in a scenario, provided the ground, if the ground was gone too soft for Charger, he's obviously not at his best. But he's disappointed before in the Irish Champion Hurdle. And while I think that there are more talented operators than him in it, a strong pace scenario where he can maybe sit closer than he did last year, it wouldn't shock me one bit if he hit the frame at 16s or 14s, whatever he's available at the moment. But it's still Honeysuckle for me, I think, is the, you know, strong staying previous course winner. She just makes total sense to me. And the more I look back at Epitaph's Champion Hurdle, she's clearly better than she showed last time. And I think maybe, you know, her absence hasn't made the heart grow fonder. You know, she has probably lost a little bit of her sparkle about her from not being seen, even though she's still the same horse that she likely was last year. I just feel that you're going to have to put up a much superior performance to win the Champion Hurdle this year. And I just think that the manner in which last year's race unfolded, Sharjah can still be a player this time around in a more, you know, a race where the emphasis is on the pace up front. I think he can go well, but still Honeysuckle for me.
Yeah, fascinating it's going to be, isn't it? And it could suit Epitaph as well, to be fair, but I understand what you mean. Honeysuckle has that form over further, and maybe it could even be the undoing of Goshen if he gets taken on up front. Maybe he will sort of blossom with more pressure on, because he is a horse who tends to build and build through the different stages of a race. So it's easy to say it might disadvantage him, but I suppose equally it could help him and keep him motivated. Graham, give us the latest on that Champion Hurdle market.
Yeah, well, Jason the Militant, big bet, big move on that one, as you'd expect, 66-1 into 25-1. Henry de Bromhead afterwards said he wasn't sure that Cheltenham would suit, but he thinks he's going to take a chance anyway. So 25-1, but that, remember, it's not running no bet if you are on board. But the Irish Imp have made their mind up on Honeysuckle. It's been a big move over the last while. That's the 9-4 favourite. Epitaph 3-1. Goshen still popular, 130. The other each way move that sort of caught my eye over the last week or so is Abacadabras. That's into 12-1. A few shrewdies that seem to be getting involved than that one each way, but it does look like it's going to be a fascinating one, the Champion Hurdle this year.
Tactically, it's certainly going to have a lot of dimension to it, isn't it? Now, the Bobby Joe Chase also took place on that card, and it was won by Acapella Bourgeois. Really genuine performance from this horse, who beat stablemate Burroughs Saint into second. Do you think this is going to have much bearing on the Grand National, James?
I would say more so with the second than anything. I mean, he had to run, didn't he, to get into the National or to qualify. And I thought it was a decent enough effort. Believe it or not, Acapella Bourgeois was putting in a career best at the age of 11, which is something we all love to see. It was a fantastic performance from him. He's just a really good old servant, as we sort of discussed earlier with Petit Mouchoir. They're just these older horses. They can give us some things to smile about. But I've always liked Burroughs Saint for the Grand National, and I've sort of watched with him sort of in mind. I mean, yeah, it wasn't the sort of run that's going to take your eye out and make you sort of want to gamble, but it was a steady performance. And I would say that he's going to have to improve a fair bit on what he's done and probably put in another career best. But he's a progressive horse, and you know he's with the right connections to take the next step.
Okay, and Mark, anything to add? I wasn't so sure it would have a bearing on Aintree, but maybe I'm wrong.
I think Acapella Bourgeois, I don't know if the National would particularly suit him. I could be totally wrong on that, and that will probably come back to bite me now when he wins by 10 lengths come the spring. But I've just seen him in a couple of those handicap chases, like the Tiestes, big field environments. He's ran well in them, but just I wonder that his jumping could come under a little bit of pressure at times. It rewards the National, it seems to reward horses that are low and slick. I just feel at times he's prone to throw in the odd mistake, and I don't know whether he'd really be suited to it. I'd actually, off a big weight in the Irish National, obviously dependent on how the handicapper views his win at the weekend. I can't imagine that it's going to be a massive impact by any means on it. But I would be more interested towards that. You're looking back at, I think, yeah, he's got £2 up to 157. It'd be a big, big ask off that sort of weight. But you know he loves Fairy House. It's where he seems to save his best for. And I'd nearly be more interested in him there. But I'd echo the view of James Burroughs Saint. That was a promising run. And you get the feeling that all year is just geared around getting him to entry in one piece. He'd be a fair operator around there, I'd say.
Okay, what price can we get on those pair for the Grand National, Graham?
Well, Acapella Bourgeois' halved in price was 50-1 beforehand into 25-1. Willie Mullins did say afterwards he's going to go for it. I think he's going to go to Aintree. And as an 11-year-old, the stats aren't so bad. Three of the last eight winners were 11-year-olds. It's got a nice racing weight as well, 10 stone 12. I think Burroughs Saint is on 10 stone 13. So I think he might be getting about a £7 pull on yesterday with Burroughs Saint. Burroughs Saint is second favourite at 14-1. That's unchanged. And the favourite now on its own is Cloth Cap. That is a 12-1 shot.
Yeah, I think there's been quite a lot of money for Cloth Cap, hasn't there? I wonder if he will run in a race at the Cheltenham Festival. Now, another person who's going to have a big decision to make in the coming months is Aidan Coleman, because if both Song for Someone and Brewing Up a Storm go for the Aintree hurdle, presumably he's going to have the choice between the two. And Brewing Up a Storm, well, he looked right back to his best in the National Spirit hurdle at Fontwell yesterday. He beat the 4-6 favourite McFabulous with a lot of ease, I'd say. This was a nice performance, albeit he was getting weight from the second horse. So going forward, I think he's run well at the Aintree Festival behind the likes of Reserve Tank before. He could be one to keep an eye on. Were you expecting a performance like this from him, James?
Yeah, I was quite impressed by him. This is also sort of followed for quite a while in his career, and it was nice to see him finally get a graded win. I'm still, I think, scarred by his final sort of hurdle fall in the Ballymore trial on Trials Day a few years back, and it's taken quite a while for him to get back to his best. But yeah, it's worked out well for him this season. He just clearly, it's quite interesting reading after the race, was saying the horse just sort of didn't quite take to fences after his fall in the Arkle. And that shows with his two really disappointing efforts. But he's gone back over hurdles. I mean, he won what looked a really sort of average race at Taunton. It wasn't particularly good. It was for horses that are 8-year-old and over. So it was the ideal race for him, really. But that was his best performance by a long, long way yesterday. I don't think McFabulous ran his race. I thought he was really disappointing, and his jumping wasn't as slick as we've seen it. But you can't take anything away from the winner. He sort of travelled into it well. He showed enough. And, you know, Fontwell's not the easiest tracks to go around as well, you know, to make ground and sort of speed up. It's not they're tracks where it's easier to do than Fontwell. But it was a good performance from Brewing Up a Storm. And if I was Aidan Coleman, which I'm clearly not, I'd go for Brewing Up a Storm in the Aintree hurdle. Yeah, okay. Definitely.
Yeah, I think that works in his favour. McFabulous, what would you do with him now? I mean, presumably he will go to that Aintree hurdle as well. Better ground would suit him, but I think he just wants that better ground, the flat track, doesn't he? But jumping was not up to scratch, so I wonder if something will come to light. Another horse who got his career back on track on Sunday was Silos Emery. He won the Grade 3 at Nace, beating Daily Tiger. This was an okay piece of form, Mark, and this is a horse who's always promised a great deal. They tried to get him to, you know, be the surprise package in the Champion Hurdle last year, and he finished fourth, running a decent race. Where would you go with him now? Because it seems he's a horse who you could fit into any sort of avenue that you had left open.
Yeah, he's pretty versatile, and he's still an effective hurdler, very much so, as you pointed out, with the Champion Hurdle run last season. Like, as a race itself, this race has averaged, I think, something like 4.7 runners as a field size for the past 10 years. Looking at the previous to the weekend, we had four runners here. Two of them didn't have any chance on ratings, and the runner-up, I don't feel, has delivered his best. So as a piece of form, that's a very poor way. Look, I think the horse has won very well, regardless of the circumstances that he's been in. But in terms of a piece of form, I'm not going totally overboard with it for this stage. But he's this sort of horse that can just... again, from a horse of owning point of view, you can pick up these graded races, you know, because there is so many opportunities out there, and there'll be great scope for him to win, you know, races like the Hilly Way Chase next season, potentially. You know, there's different options for him throughout the year. Ground, he seems to be pretty versatile as well. You know, in terms of immediate options, I think there's a 2.5 mile Grade 2 at Fairy House in the spring, and that would kind of make sense for me, rather than trying to test your mettle against Jacques and Pourceau in a Champion Chase. Although, look, obviously, if that hadn't happened to Jacques and Pourceau, in the meantime, he'd be a deputy that could run well at a price and hit the frame. But I just think there's probably, he's a little bit below top Grade 1 standard, but there are lots of graded opportunities for him out there to pick up races.
Yeah, it's a byproduct of a really bloated graded programme, isn't it? But he can take advantage of that. Now, some interesting contests coming up this weekend. We have the likes of the Greatwood Gold Cup at Newbury, we have the Grimthorpe at Doncaster, and also a really good card at Kelso. So we're going to have a look at those in a moment and also get some Cheltenham Festival tips for you. Stick with us.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
It's time to look ahead to this weekend now, and as I mentioned just before the break, an array of meetings for us. Maybe not the peak of quality, as you'd expect, running up to the Cheltenham Festival, but the Moor Battle Hurdle, interestingly, is now a handicap sponsored by Bet365. It takes place at 3:15 at Kelso on Saturday and could feature another Emmett Mullins Raider. Graham, you have the prices.
Yeah, the Shunter has been backed. Looks like it might be going over now. Of course, on the back of that Greatwood victory, it is a 10-1 into 6-1. The favourite is Proshema, who was a flop in that Greatwood, it has to be said. It was pulled. The Paz had won a couple of bumpers since then, and that's been well supported. That's the 9-2 favourite. Bareback Jack has done nothing wrong for the McCains. That is next in the betting at 5-1. We have Christopher Wood, of course, Scottish County Hurdle winner. That is next in the betting 8-1 from that. And then a couple of other interesting ones. Favoir, 10-1. Blakely Point, 12-1. Miranda, also 12-1. And it's bigger prices the rest for that one. So it's an interesting field. So it'll be fascinating to see who holds the ground for that race at Kelso on Saturday.
Fantastic. There's also a Grade 2 for novices over 2 mile and 2 furlong that could feature some interesting horses. The likes of My Drogo are entered, and also maybe we could see Cloth Cap in the listed Premier Chase. Elsewhere, we've got the Greatwood Gold Cup at Newbury. We've got the Grimthorpe Handicap Chase at Doncaster, historically two horses. I know Paul Nichols does very well in that Greatwood Gold Cup. But James, what are you most looking forward to this weekend?
Yeah, it's a really, really good card from racing all over. I was raised in Newbury, so I've always liked that Greatwood meeting. And as you say, Paul Nichols always does particularly well in the Grade 3. The horse of his that I'm quite interested by is Grand Sancy, actually, if they decide to sort of switch him in that direction. He was really disappointing behind Garlaw, we discussed earlier, in the Rising Stars, and he's a horse I think that sort of really wants a sort of goodish sort of ground. You know, he won the Kingwell 2 years ago on good ground, so I think they've sort of kept him off. He's rated 149, and given he's quite a talented chaser, he won at Chepstow at the start of the season, he might be a little bit better than that. And this is exactly the sort of race that Paul Nicholls loves to target. And it wouldn't surprise me if they've kept him back with this race in mind. So Grand Sancy is the one I'm particularly looking forward to.
Maybe foreseen some sort of small plan there with Paul Nicholls. Good stuff. Now let's get a Cheltenham Festival tip from each of you. Mark, I'll go to you first. Who did you pick out?
The horse I like, I put it on the paper about 10 days ago or so. Longhouse Poet for the National Hunt Chase. I just think it's a race that has the potential to cut up, in the sense that, you know, Ryle Pagai, who knows where he's going to go at this stage, but it has been, you know, the race manager for the owner suggested his personal preference would be for the Gold Cup. Now, whether that has any bearing on the decision, God only knows. You have Latest Exhibition, who Paul Nolan has suggested could stay home for Fairy House. You know, Paul Nicholls has next destination in there, and you don't know whether he'll go for the RSA to take on Monkfish or whether he'll go here in a recent stable tour. I've seen it was the RSA that was talked about. You know, Ascari 10 as a handicap option. And I'm just thinking this race, with the exception of Galvin at the top, was pretty strong. I just thought he's been bigger in previous weeks, but still 14-1 Longhouse Poet for the National Hunt Chase. Like, his form has been boosted everywhere along as he's gone. You know, he beat Run Wild Fred, who's obviously the Tiesti's form, and he beat the big dog Grand National Trial winner at Punchestown earlier in the season. You know, and I just, you get the feeling that the whole campaign has been geared towards the spring for him. You know, he's got classy Grade 1 form as a novice hurdler from behind the likes of Envoy Allen and Latest Exhibition, Elixir Danae. You know, I just think he makes sense in general as a horse who could run well. And Martin Brazel has obviously struck at the festival with City Island in recent times as well. So to me, I just thought he was a bit of value at 14-1 still, even though he had been bigger priced in recent weeks. But that's where I'd be heading. Longhouse Poet, I should say, in the National Hunt Chase.
Thanks very much, Mark. I liked your thinking with that one. Graham, do you have a fancy or a horse that's come in for money in recent days that you think we should mention?
Well, there's one I think still flying under the radar, maybe because of who trains it, but it's a defending champion, Lisnagar Oscar, in the Stayers Hurdle. I liked what it did last time out after that wind up. I think it could be back to its best. I'll give it a real shot. It's about a 16-1 shot. I think if it was trained by anyone else, it would be probably half that price. But I still think it's very backable each way price for that Paddy Power Stayers Hurdle, Lisnagar Oscar at 16-1.
Yeah, I think he's almost been a bit underrated, hasn't he, Lisnagar Oscar? But he'll be suited if the race turns into a real test, a strong stare. And as you say, it was a step in the right direction last time. James, who are you adding to the hat?
I'm also going in the Stayers Hurdle, sponsored by our friends at Paddy Power, with Time Hill. I think he's a really, really smart, progressive horse. And I think the Paisley Park angle is really interesting in this race. He's at 8 going on 9 now. And I just wonder just whether he's just reached that sort of age now where he's just going to tip over his peak, whereas Time Hill might be coming towards it. So at the prices, I think he's a really backable price. He's about, well, I'm sure our friends can tell us, but he's about 7-2 I've got him at. And I think he's a really sort of progressive horse who could take another step forward. And this season he's been superb. So I think everything ticks for him, and he's got some fantastic festival form, which is a massive plus. And yeah, I really like him, and I'd love to see him do it.
I'm with you. I'm Team Time Hill as well over Paisley Park. What price, Graham, confirmed for us?
Yes, 7-2 Time Hill. Paisley Park is the 3-1 favourite. Time Hill, 7-2.
Fantastic. Thanks very much. And now a nap of the week or the weekend.
This will not be beaten.
Who are you going to go for, James?
Yeah, I'm going to go against your wish and not go for the weekend after Samuel Jackson on Friday. I'm going to stick to Wincanton on Wednesday, which is always a good one. The horse I quite like is a horse called Amelia's Dance. She's 12-1 shot. She's a horse I've been following for quite some time. I think she's a bit better than her mark, and I'd like to see her finally put her best foot forward. She's been a bit unlucky. So Amelia's Dance in the 2:40 at Wincanton on Wednesday.
Brilliant, thank you very much. And no, I said this week, so I'm definitely I'll take anyone this week. And Mark, yourself, who have you got your eye on?
I'm on a hiding to nothing after his exploits last week. I have absolutely no chance of living up to that. I think tomorrow at Gorn there's obviously the rescheduled Red Mills Chase, and for me there is a beginner's chase on the card that looks a straight shoe out between Ante and Cedarwood Road. And Cedarwood Road is a horse I've had an awful lot of time for back through last season as a novice. And I thought he ran very, very creditably in defeat against the big getaway. He was obviously out for the season after picking up an issue following that race at Christmas. But I just think Cedarwood Road, given a little bit of time again, he's only six. Like, his best days are definitely ahead of him. But I just thought this was a nice opportunity for him. you know, soft ground, no problem to him either. Just think he's going to be a proper graded chaser in time, and this is a nice opportunity for him to get off the mark. So Cedarwood Road in the 4:20 at Goran tomorrow.
Thanks, Mark. I'm with you on that one. Ante just flatters to deceive, doesn't he? I think there's enough reason to take him on. Graham, anything to add?
Well, I'm just keeping my eye on the shunter coming up at Kelso on the weekend. We talked earlier on in the show about Emmett Mullins, how he's starting to become a bit of an expert at these British raids. And the money has been trickling in for the shunter. It was 10-1 earlier on. Now it is into 6-1. So that could be significant if the shunter goes for that more battle handicap hurdle at Kelso. It's the 3:15 on Saturday.
Thanks very much. Thanks to James, Mark and Graham for their time today. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Make sure you rate, review and subscribe. And we'll see you back on Friday with Bruce and the team to look at the weekend's action then.